Morning, it's today's daf and Shabbos Samech Hey. We are on the top of Samech Hey and Aleph. We're starting at the two dots at the second line down. We are coming off of a Mishnah on Samech Tam and Beis yesterday's daf, where the Mishnah describes the articles that a woman are allowed to wear on Shabbos. As we have now spent a lot of time in this parak, this is a longer parak in the Masechta, starting back in Zayin Amud Beis, and we have a couple more days of this parak. Parak will conclude on Samech Zayin. It's 11 blot this parak. So we have been discussing the articles of clothing that a woman and a man are not allowed to wear on Shabbos for a number of concerns and considerations. Even though clothing fundamentally is a tachshik, a man and woman are allowed to be dressed in clothing, and anything that is designed and designated as a tachshik. Nevertheless, as we spoke about since the beginning of the parak, the Chachamim put a ban on wearing certain items out for various concerns, and I've quoted this Tosus repeatedly, as I think it is a cornerstone to this entire parak, where Tosus in the first Tosus in the parak basically outlines and categorizes the various concerns that the Chachamim have in terms of what may happen if a woman wears or a man wears the particular articles of clothing and jewelry that are outlined in the course of the parak. While discussing the items that a man and woman are not allowed to wear, the Mishnah also mentions the items that a woman and a man are in fact allowed to wear. Now, why mention articles that you are allowed to wear? Isn't that the default position that you're allowed to wear clothing and jewelry? And the purpose of our Mishnah here in this parak is to tell us what a woman can't wear. So obviously, what the Mishnah is relating to are things that you might have thought differently. Meaning in all these items that we're discussing in this Mishnah that we're in the middle of discussing, so there was a habamina, there was certainly consideration that a woman shouldn't be able to wear them, and the Mishnah's point is that she is allowed to wear them, and so now we are up to the Mishnah's description of various wads of cotton. So if cotton is stuck in the ear, or in her shoe, or for a woman, if let's say it is a sanitary napkin, so those are items that a woman is allowed to go out with on Shabbos, and we're not concerned. And you'll see in just a moment why there would be consideration that she shouldn't be allowed to wear them. And so let's begin with the Gemara in Samechemet Aleph at the top of the Amud. Uve moch shebe azna. And we're talking about now a wad of cotton in her ear. Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel hu shekasher ba'azna. Now on this, Rami Bar Yecheskel puts an addendum, and that is that she can only put the wad of cotton in her ear, but only if it's securely tied around her ear. So that means to say, now that we're seeing together, that there actually is a concern when it comes to the wad of cotton, and that is that if it's not securely tied in her ear, so it may come out, and she may want to then put it back in her ear, but as it comes out, she may end up carrying it, and so therefore, in order for the Chachamim not to be concerned, so therefore it has to actually have some sort of connection, some sort of tie, where it is tied to the ear. Exactly mechanically how that works, where it's tied to the ear, maybe it's looped around the earlobe, not really sure, but anyway, that is Rami Bar Yecheskel, v'mochshe b'sandala, and now we're talking about a cotton on her foot. In other words, there is some sort of sore that she has in her foot, and the cotton is over there to basically cushion and provide some sort of relief and comfort. Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel v'ushikashala b'sandala. And again, Rami Bar Yecheskel makes the same point over here, and that is that it's got to be tied. That wad of cotton has got to be tied to the shoe, so it's got to be secured, and to ensure that it does not fall off the shoe. And now we're talking about the cotton that's used for a woman for menstruation, in order so that she doesn't leak, presumably. So Savar Rami Bar Chama. I got my Ramis mixed up. Savar Rami Bar Chama lemeimar v'hu shekshur la bin yarkaseha. So the Gemara made the following assumption, meaning that by the wad in the ear and the wad in the shoe, it had to be tied and secured so that in the event that it falls off, you won't come to pick it up and carry dalams b'shus rabin. And now the Gemara is suggesting that maybe the same requirement should be needed regarding the woman and the wad of cotton that she's using for sanitary purposes. So Amar Rava afapiche no kashala kem demais lo asyala asuye. So Rava says no, not over here. In this situation, because if it were to fall out, it would obviously be disgusting, and the woman would not be tempted to pick it up and carry it. So therefore, there's no requirement over here that it has to be tied and secured in place. Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the following question from Rabbi Abba. Let's say regarding this tampon, so let's say it had a handle, so that it could be detached and reinserted. So Amalei Mutter. So he said to that he says, no, that would be okay. So Idmar Nami Amar Rav Nachman Bar Ushi Amar Rav Yochanan Asala Beis Yad Mutter. And the Gemara quotes as well, in the name of Rav Yochanan, that even with the handle would be okay, and the Chachamim were not concerned that the woman's going to take it out and reinsert it while walking Dal Amos Brishus Arabin. And now the Gemara tells the story of a couple of Amorayim. So obviously when it comes to the wad within the ear and the cotton in the shoe, that is not gender specific, meaning that the Mishnah's point is that it could be done by a man or woman. It happens to be the Mishnah is discussing a woman, but only because we're getting to the third case of the moch that is used for a menstruation. But obviously in number one and two, it could apply to both men and women. And now the Gemara tells the following two episodes, two very quick anecdotes. Rav Yochanan Nafik Bahula Bei Midrasha. So Rav Yochanan, when he went with the wad in his ear, and he went to the Beis Medrash, V'chalukin Alav Chavirov. And his colleagues said, no, you're not allowed to do that. They disputed his position. And Rav Yane Nafik Bahula Karmelis, V'chalukin Alav Koldora. Rav Yane also had some sort of wad tucked in his ear. In other words, Rav Yochanan and Rav Yane, or they were suffering from some sort of discharge coming out of the ear. They put a wad in their ear. And we're going to add, because Rashi makes this point, and it's a necessary point to our discussion, and they didn't have it tied down. Remember, Rami Bar Yecheskel taught us that in order for you to be able to go out with a wad of cotton in your ear, it has to be tied down. So we're going to add that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yannai didn't do that. And once again, when it comes to Rabbi Yannai, same conclusion, V'chalukin alav kol doro. And the entire generation went against Rabbi Yannai, meaning his colleagues didn't agree with him. Now the Gemara says, now, when all said and done, it sounds like Rav Yochanan and Rav Yannai in this particular situation, so they weren't conforming to what we just learned together. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. Rami Bar Yecheskel said that in order to go out with cotton in the ear, it has to be secured, it has to be tied in. So the Gemara says, Lokasha had the mehadek had the lo mehadek. So the Gemara says, true. Rami Bar Yecheskel was describing where the wad of cotton was not tightly in place. And so it was loose within the ear, and so therefore it is likely that it's going to fall out of the ear, and if not tied, it's going to fall down to the ground, and it's going to pick it up and may carry it. But Rav Yochanan and Rav Yannai were stuffing the cotton in their ear. It was very tightly in place, and they felt that under those circumstances, there is no need to then have to tie it up. That is the Gemara's distinction and defense of the actions of Rav Yochanan and Rav Yannai. Truth of the matter is that the way I presented the Gemara was Rashi's first pshat. Rashi does offer a second pshat in the Gemara, but Rashi prefers the first pshat. I offered the pshat that I just said over. Pilpul Areach, sorry, let me read the heading. Bepilpul uvegilgal melach. A woman can go out with various spices in her mouth. The Mishnah yesterday described that a woman can go out on Shabbos where she has some sort of peppercorn in her mouth, and gilgal melach, some sort of wad of salt that she has in her mouth. And the Gemara goes on to explain pilpul l'reach hapeh. So the pilpul that she has in her mouth, that's reach hapeh. That basically she suffers from bad breath, and the pilpul is there to help her along that particular issue. Gilgal melach lidur shini. And the wad of salt is put into her mouth because she's suffering from some sort of toothache, and it helps her. Okay, and the point is that since this is the normal way that it is worn, so you're allowed to do so in this matter. Why isn't an issue of refuah? So that is a fair question, although quite frankly, it is not brought up in the Gemara and Rashi nor Tosos really bring it up. Probably it's not an issue of refuah because it is something put into her mouth, and as we saw back in the Mishnah, she put it into her mouth before Shabbos. And refuah is... refuah is something that is done on Shabbos itself. Presumably, that's the explanation in terms of why it is not subject to refuah. The chol davar shenosan l'soch pia, and the Mishnah then goes. We go back to the Mishnah and we're describing anything that she puts into her mouth. Right, chol davar. Obviously, it's coming to include anything. What else does a woman put in her mouth? So the Gemara says zangbala einami darcina. So the Gemara says ginger, cinnamon, other types of spices that a woman, or for that matter, a man puts in their mouth. Again, maybe to help out in terms of the breath. Maybe it has some other therapies as well, other benefits as well. We go now to the tooth. Shein toteva shein shel zahav. Rebbe Matir v'chachamim osrim. So, you have some sort of denture in your mouth. Right now the Mishnah here is really describing one tooth, which is clearly a false tooth. So if it's made up of gold, so we have a debate in the Mishnah whether or not it could be worn out on Shabbos. Rebbe says that it's mutter, and the chachamim say that it is aser. Rashi back in the Mishnah, if you could take a look back in yesterday's daf on Samach Talmud Beis, so Rashi writes regarding the Chachamim's position that it's Aser, why would it be Aser? Meaning, if you think about it, Rebbe's position seems to be the more defensible position, because if you have a missing gap in your mouth and it is filled with a false tooth, you probably would want to keep it there, and what would be the concern? So if you look at Rashi back in the Mishnah, Rashi writes, it looks different than your other teeth, meaning this false tooth is made of gold. So Rashi back in the Mishnah says, well, it is discolored, meaning your teeth are for the most part white, and this particular tooth now is gold, and so it may be pointed out to you, hey, that's a false tooth, and you may get self-conscious about it, and you may want to therefore take it out. That's Rashi's understanding of the sheet of the Chachamim. Okay, it could be also that the gold is something which is exquisite, and you may want to show it to others. Although it seems to be slightly harder to suggest. Generally speaking, people do not want to see your tooth that closely. Anyway, Amar Rabbi Zera lo shenu elo shel zav about b'shel kesef divrei hakol muter. So Rabbi Zera now makes the following distinction. If the false tooth is made out of gold, and we're going to say it like Rashi back in the Mishnah, and therefore, if pointed out to you, you're going to be apt to take it out of your mouth, and you may end up carrying it for Amos and Rishos Arabim. Fine, that's where you have the debate. But if the false tooth is made out of silver, which is more in line with the color of your teeth, so then everyone's of the opinion that's mutter because no one is going to point it out, or it will be extraordinarily unlikely that someone will point it out. And you're not gonna be tempted to take it out of your mouth while you're walking through Rosh Hashanah Rabin. Tanya Me'achi, the Gemara quotes a brisa supporting this idea. B'shal Kesef Divrei Hakol Mutar. If the false tooth is made out of silver, everyone says it's mutar. Shal Zahav, Rebbe Matir v'Chachamim Osrim. And so the brisa says that the debate is limited to only a gold tooth. Amar Abaye. So Abaye does what he does throughout Shas, and that is that he strings together Tanayim, who are basically operating with the same premise. Abaye says that the Shita of Rebbe and Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar kulos rilu dechomide de migne bay lo asya la asuye. So these three Tanaim are all equally of the opinion that if it's something where if you take it out, it will be embarrassing to you. So therefore, that motivation of keeping it on your body because you do not want to suffer the embarrassment once it's out of your body or once it's off, once it's been removed. So that will be enough of an incentive to keep it on you. And therefore, the Chachamim, we're not concerned that you're going to take it off, or in this case, take it out. So Rebbe Hadamaran, now let's go through all three Tanaim and see how each one of them subscribes to this viewpoint. First, we start off with the Shita of Rebbe, and as we already got done saying, Rebbe's of the opinion that even though it's a gold tooth, but because once you take it out, you're going to have a clear gap in your mouth, and that will be embarrassing. So Rebbe therefore says that the gold tooth can be worn out in the street on Shabbos. Rebbe Eliezer de Tanya, now the sheet of Rebbe Eliezer we saw already previously in this parak. Rebbe Eliezer poter bekovus of etzluchis shel plaitan. Rebbe Eliezer allows a woman to go out with these pouches of perfume, right? The pouches of perfume, which was of major dispute just a couple of days ago in the daf. Rebbe Eliezer says that because the woman who typically goes out with such a pouch is a woman who does not have a pleasant odor, and so therefore she wears these pouches in order so that she will have a pleasant odor. By her taking it off, she is going to then have that poor odor, that poor body odor. So therefore she will be embarrassed to take it off. And once again, according to Rebbe Eliezer, that motivation, that incentive will instruct the Chachamim that she's allowed to wear it out to the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. She will not be tempted to take it off. And finally, the Shita of Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar, de Tanya, we learned in the Braitha. Chal amar Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar, kol shehu lamata min asfacha. And we're talking here about the wool cap, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the wool cap is worn under the svacha. The svacha is basically her regular head covering, and below it and above it you have various additional layers of head covering that were worn. So according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, anything that goes below the head covering, one is allowed to wear on Shabbos. She may be tempted to take it off and show it to her friends. So Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, no, she won't. since it exists under her head covering, in order for her to show it off to her friend, she's going to have to take off her regular head covering. So a woman wouldn't do that. A woman wouldn't expose her head in the Rishus HaRambam. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, because the woman is embarrassed to take off her head covering, so therefore anything that exists or that she wears under the head covering would be mutter for her to go out into a Rishus HaRambam. Adkan, that is the end of our first sugya of the day. And that finishes up from yesterday's Mishnah regarding the items that a woman can go out with on Shabbos. The Mishnah continues. Yotza b'stela sha'al atzinis, a woman is also allowed to go out with a coin that she wears on its tzinis. Tzinis, as we're going to see together in the Gemara, is basically a wound that exists on her foot, on top of the foot, on the sole of the foot, wherever. And so, as therapy back in the day, so what they would do is they would tape a coin to the wound, and that would be effective. That would have a therapeutic benefit. We'll discuss more of that in the Gemara. And the point of the Mishnah is that she can go out with it on Shabbos. There really are two points, if you think about it. One is that with the Chacham, we're not concerned that it's going to fall off and she's going to end up carrying it. And two, the other issue is a Muksa issue, meaning coins on Shabbos typically are Muksa, and nevertheless, she's allowed to put this coin on her wound on Shabbos. So that requires more of a clarification, why that should be. We're going to be discussing that in the Gemara. Habanus katanus yosas b'chutin v'afilu b'kismen shebazneim. Young girls can go with strings in their ear and also with little toothpicks as well within their ear. What are we describing over here? Rashi says we're talking about young girls who got their ears pierced. And in order to make sure that the holes don't close, so what they do is they thread in a string through the hole or some sort of toothpick through the hole. And that ensures that the holes don't close. And the point the Mishnah is making is that even though we're not talking about jewelry per se, even though the entire purpose of the string or the toothpick is just simply to keep the ear, the hole in the ear open, nevertheless, a young girl is allowed to go out within the Shabbos. We're not concerned that she's going to take it off and carry it in the Rishus HaRabin. And as Rashi points out in the Mishnah, we're also saying over here, tremendous chiddush, because these strings really don't define themselves as a tachshit, and neither does the toothpick. And Rashi points out in the Mishnah, I'll read the Rashi inside, the first line of the Rashi. Rabusa kamar, it's a chiddush. The afag abdalab tachshit. Even though this is not jewelry, but noihu, but still for her it is considered an adornment. Because urcha bahachi, because that's how the young girls typically go. Meaning this is a very, back in the day, a very normal and normative way of these young girls keeping their holes pierced. Their ears pierced, and so therefore it is noi. It is something which is quote unquote decorative, and therefore it's not considered a burden. That is the additional chiddush of the Mishnah regarding the strings and the toothpicks. Aravios yotzim ruulos, and then the Mishnah points out that if you are an Arabian woman, now Rashi points out you're Jewish. It just happens to be that you live in the Arabian countries, and in the Arabian countries the mode of dress is that a woman wore something over their face as well. Okay, in this regard, not much has changed over the centuries. Rashi writes over here, Yotzim Re'ulos Derech Arabios Lios Mu'utafos Roshan Upneim Chutz Me'Na'inayim. So Rashi describes over here that they would wear not only a head covering, but a face covering that would cover everything but the eyes. And since this is considered in Arabia a normal mode of dress, and if a Jewish woman lives in Arabia, so she'll also dress in this manner. So on Shabbos, a Jewish woman living in Arabia can go out in this manner. Umidayos perufos. Now, if you are a woman, a Jewish woman living in Madai, in Mead, so they also had a unique style of dress that they wore back then. So perufos. Now, I could describe it, but I really don't know what I am describing, as it sounds like some sort of either toga or some sort of wrap, whatever the case is. It basically had a fastening hook. And the prufos is basically the description of the fastening hook that they wrap themselves with. Now, the Mishnah goes on to say, v'chol adam. Now, the truth of the matter, says the Mishnah, is that you don't have to be a Jewish woman living in Arabia in order to be allowed to wear this kind of dress. And the same thing is true in Madai as well. It just happens to be that the Chachamim use the examples that were prevalent in their time, but this mode of dress is acceptable, and a woman's allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Parefas ala evan, vala egos, vala matbeam. Now the Mishnah says that as far as what you could use as a fastener for this parefas, So you could use a stone, a nut, or a coin. But you cannot do so on Shabbos itself. That last line in the Mishnah is confusing, and the Gemara is going to note that, and the Gemara is going to try to help clarify that last line of the Mishnah. Let's start off with the Gemara. Maitzinus, we're describing now the coin that is put on the wound on the foot, and it is the description of sin, so bas ara. So the Gemara gives an explanation, which I know helps for the people living in the time of Bavel. Doesn't do much for us. The Gemara says sinis is bas ara. Okay, if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi writes basically what I said back in the Mishnah. It's a wound, makishi tachas pirsas haregel. So Rashi describes it as being it's on the sole of the foot. Vikosher basela lerufua. And so what you do is you are going to now put a coin right on that wound, and it will be therapeutic, will be beneficial. So mashna sela, the Gemara wants to know now, does it have to be a coin? So Elin called me the Dakushe Malala Leavala Chaspa. The Gemara says, look, if we're just looking for something which provides a nice hard surface against it, in other words, it's on the sole and the foot, it's a tough place to just simply put a band-aid. So you want something hard over there, so good. So the Gemara says, so use a shard. So the Gemara says, El Mishum Shukta. So the Gemara says, well, it must be that the coin has creates a moist environment. In other words, perhaps the metal against the skin creates perspiration. It creates a moist environment. Maybe that's a way to understand it. But anyway, so the Gemara says, fine. So maybe that's why we want a coin. So lavale tasa. So the Gemara says, okay. So if I just want something that is that is hard and it's going to create perspiration, so just use a piece of metal. In other words, why does it have to be a coin? Elamishum sursa. So the Gemara says, oh, because the coin is minted. And somehow the pressure of that minted texture against the sole of the foot. So the Gemara is suggesting now maybe that's the benefit. So le'avilei pulsa, so the Gemara says, fine. So you can use a piece of wood that is made in a mold, and that's going to give you that minted texture. So Amar Abayi, Shema Min HaKulam Anla. So Abayi says, okay, so you know what? All of the above. Meaning in our multiple choice questions of why specifically the minted coin, so the Gemara says, because it's hard, because it creates perspiration, because it's minted, so for all those reasons, that's why the coin is going to be most beneficial for her. Habanas Yosos V'chutin. We're talking about the girls now going out with strings in their ear. Avu de Shmuel. Now the Gemara tells us the practices of the father of Shmuel. Number one, Lo Shavik Luhu Lamante Nafke V'chutin. He did not allow his daughters to go out on Shabbos with the strings in their ear. Now that goes against our Mishnah. The Gemara is going to note that momentarily. Number two, Lo Shavik Luhu Ganayim Labei Hadadi. He did not allow his daughters to sleep together in the same bed. He insisted that they sleep in separate beds. That also will be explained momentarily. Number three, what he would do is he would prepare mikvos for his daughters to use in the month of Nisan, and he would make mats and reeds for them in the month of Tishrei, and that will be explained in great detail on the Amud Beis of today's daf. We are going to go through all three activities where Shmuel did specifically for his daughters, the father of Shmuel, did specifically for his daughters, and the Gemara is going to go through each one, explaining each one in more detail. Number one, Lo Shavik Lu Yosef Bechutin. So he did not allow his daughters to go out with strings in the ear. But Antanan, the Gemara says, but what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says, Abanas Yosef Bechutin. So Mishnah allows it. And Avu Deshmol can't go against the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Bante Davu Deshmol Ditziv Onem Havu. The daughters of Shmuel were not going out with simple strings in their ear, but rather they were going out with colored strings. Colored strings which were nice, really decorative, and as Rashi points out on the bottom of the Amud really succinctly, because it's so nice, while they're going through Rishus HaRabim, they're going to take it off to show it to their friends. And then you walk right into the concern that maybe they're going to carry it for Amos in Rishus HaRabim. Number two, Lo Shavik Luhu Ganayim Gabi Hadadeh. He did not allow his daughters to sleep in the same bed together. He insisted they sleep on separate beds. And now the Gemara is going to try to understand why that should be. Why was he so insistent? Why for him was this such an important issue? Now, Leimah Misaila LeRavuna Dam Ravuna. So the Gemara says, now, perhaps the issue over here is that it conforms to the Shita of Ravuna. Ravuna says, Nashim HaMesula Zubazu. If women are sleeping together and rubbing bodies one against the other, Psulas LeKahuna. So they are going to be disqualified to marry a Kohen. Now, it is not perfectly clear in the Gemara why that should be. What is Rav Huna's concern when women are basically rubbing one against the other? So Rashi over here on the top of the Amud Beis writes as follows, Psulas LeKahuna LeKohen Gadol. So Rashi says over here that this is really an issue of Kohen Gadol. Rashi says the law havya besula shlema, because by the woman engaging in this activity, so they're not going to have a besula shlema. The avagav the Kohen Gadol be yume lo hava. Now we get to the next part of the Rashi, but before we get to the next part of Rashi, meaning we know the halacha is that when it comes to a Kohen Gadol can only marry a besula, right? Last week's parsha. So Kohen Gadol can only marry a besula. So as a result of that, when you have these women who engage in this behavior, aside from the fact that it's lewd behavior and it's and you can condemn it all that the Gemara wants, and in other places the Gemara does condemn this kind of behavior. And even though there is not a bona fide isser per se for a woman to engage in this behavior, but obviously it is a breach of tznius and kedusha. And in addition to all that, there is also a halachic consideration, as Rashi over here on the top explains, and that is that now she will be there will be an effacing of her basula, and so therefore, when the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry her. Now, next part of Rashi is that okay, but this is Rav Huna talking, and Rav Huna is an Amora living well after Chorban Bayis Sheni. There was no Kohen Gadol, and Rashi now makes this observation. The Afagab the Kohen Gadol biyomei lohava. Now, of course, there's no Kohen Gadol, so it is certainly of interest, and it has halachic bearing, but not in the days of Rav Huna. Lohava hol v'derech znus chashiv lei lav arach ara. But Rashi says, but derech znus, meaning there is the very rigid halachic issue, and that she's not allowed to marry Kohen Gadol, and on top of that, there is a more global issue, which is it's an act of znus. It is lewd behavior, and so therefore a woman should not be involved in lewd behavior. And maybe, if we can connect the 2 points of Rashi, the fact that she can't marry a Kohen Gadol is revelatory. It actually informs us that it is kind of a lewd behavior. That's Rashi. If you see Tosfos over here on the top of the Amud, on the Amud base, right alongside Rashi, so Tosos gives an alternative suggestion. He cites Rashi's explanation. He gives an alternative explanation that if a woman engages in this behavior, she'll qualify now as a zona. A zona, we know that a kohen is not allowed to marry a zona. The Gemara in Yevamos spends a lot of time giving us definition of what exactly is a zona. So suggests Tosos that maybe over here, if she engages in this kind of behavior, she would qualify as a zona. And that means that no Kohen would allow to marry her. And then that means that then you avoid the problem of Rashi, because now it comes out that the Rav Huna's statement applies even to his day as well. Anyway, with all that stated, the Gemara now is suggesting that this is what's behind Avuah d'Shmuel. Now remember, Avuah d'Shmuel went one step further, because Avuah d'Shmuel says they can't even sleep in the same bed. Now that is a far cry from what Rav Huna was describing. But the Gemara is suggesting that maybe that's what Avuah d'Shmuel was concerned with. And the Gemara's simple response to that is low. No. Meaning, it's not necessarily that Avuah d'Shmuel is arguing with Rav Huna, it's just that his instructions for his own daughters is not predicated on Rav Huna, but another consideration. Basically, what he didn't want is he didn't want his daughters to have familiarity with sleeping in bed with another person, because it will then acclimate them to having the need to be in bed with another person. And until they're married, he just simply didn't want them to be that comfortable with that idea. And so the Gemara says that's really what is behind the practice of Avuah d'Shmuel. And finally, the third practice of Avuah d'Shmuel regarding his daughters is the discussion regarding mikvah. Now, the truth of the matter is that we discussed this already pretty recently in the daf. We discussed this back in the end of Masechta Nida, which is really not that long ago. And we get to revisit all the issues here once again. And just like Rashi was back in Masechta Nida, so too we're here in Masechta Shabbos, Samach Emet Beis. So Rashi over here goes through all the background information so that we're good and comfortable with the third practice of Avuah d'Shmuel. So I will not read Rashi inside, but I will paraphrase the points of Rashi, and then we'll go back to the Gemara and we'll see it all inside. For a man or a woman to tovel in order to become tahor, so there are one of two options. Either there is a mayan or there's a mikvah. A mayan is a wellspring, a natural wellspring where the waters come subterranean, and basically springs and natural currents of water, where its source is really coming from underground. So that in halacha is referred to as a mayan. On the other hand, you also have a mikvah. Mikvah means a collected body of natural rainwater. So the word mikvah actually means something which is collected in one area. And there is a very basic difference between a mayan and a mikvah. And that is explains Rashi over here, that when you're toveling in a mayan, so the water can be stationary, the water can be in motion. Now the likelihood is that the water is not going to be stationary because it is a current of water. But the point is that when you're toveling in a mayan, the water can be in motion, and that's perfectly okay. However, if a man or a woman are going to be using a mikvah, a collected pool of rainwater, so there the halacha demands that the water has to be stationary. If the water is in motion while a man or a woman are toveling in a mikvah, it will not provide tahara, it does not purify the individual. It has to be stationary. The terminology that's used is ashborin, but it cannot be in motion. So here is a fundamental difference between a mayan and a mikvah. Now, the daughters of the father of Shmuel, right, the siblings of Shmuel, the sisters of Shmuel. So what their father prepared for them is that in the month of Nisan, the father made a mikvah for them. And in the month of Tishrei, so he made mats for them. And now let's see the Gemara inside. The Gemara says it very succinctly, but I'll explain it in some detail. Avalu mikvah b'yom Nisan. So we are going to go with step number one. Step number one is that Avod Shmuel made a mikvah for their daughters in the month of Nisan. Now the Gemara gives very little explanation, but we'll just read the Gemara inside. Misayila the Rab Damarav Mitra b'marav asad the Rab Pras. That how do I know that it's raining out in the west, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, when the Euphrates River grows and increases in height? So that means to say that really what is feeding the Euphrates River? It's the rain that's going in Eretz Yisrael. Now, topographically, geographically, is this accurate? So the answer, of course, is yes, meaning that Rav lived at the time, so Rav knew what he was talking about. But in terms of the topography and the geography, so it could, certainly it's my lack of understanding of the nature of Eretz Yisrael, and it could also very well be just that the Eretz Yisrael, as we have it outlined today, could be, in fact, larger as described by Rav. Whatever the case is, it rained out in the west, and therefore the Euphrates River grew. And now, what is Avod Shmuel's concern? His concern now is that this rainwater that comes from Eretz Yisrael obviously has mikvah status. Now, even though the Euphrates itself is a natural body of water, it is a current, it's a ma'ayan. Nevertheless, in this springtime, after the long winter, after the rain hits the high points of Eretz Yisrael, and then it starts draining down into the Euphrates River, so now the Euphrates River is going to be a combination. It will be a blend of ma'ayan, of natural spring water, and it's also going to be rainwater as well. And Avod Shmuel was concerned that in the springtime, when this concern was clear, because you see the Euphrates rising in the springtime, so now he's afraid that we have more rainwater than we have of the natural spring water. And of course, the Euphrates is a body in motion. It's a water body in motion. And so therefore, it would not work as a mikvah because it's in motion. And so what Avod Shmuel did for his daughters is that during the springtime, he would prepare separate mikvahs, meaning he would have dug out holes in the ground and allow for rainwater to collect in those holes in the ground. And then his daughters would be toveling in a kasher mikvah because it would be a stationary body of water. This is all Avod Shmuel. Interesting over here, the Gemara does not spend any time talking about the mats. The mats we discussed back in the Masechta Nida. I'll come back at the end, at the two dots, I'll come back and discuss the mats. Anyway, this is the understanding of Avod Shmuel and why it is that he made separate mikvahs for his daughters in the springtime. There's a really interesting a lot of interesting Tosfos over here. You can see a lot of Tosfos discussion over here. But if you look at the third Tosfos on the Amud Shemer Yirbu Anotzrim, and you look at the end of the Tosfos, Tosfos says, let's think this through. What we're having over here is that we're starting with the base of a kosher ma'ayan, meaning the Euphrates has the status of a ma'ayan. And then in the springtime, what you have is slowly but surely rainwater being introduced. And Tosos at the end, it's the last five, six lines of Tosos, the In Tomar. Tosos writes, Amayt Chayshin and Shema Yirbu Anotrim, Lema Kama Kama Batil. So Tosos says, we have a principle, which is that if I have dripping in one liquid into another liquid, so as it's dripping in, we say, with each drop that comes in, each drop becomes batal. This is the principle of kama kama batal. Kidda amar, the Beperkei de Masechet Avodah Zarah. It's at the end of Masechet Avodah Zarah, the fifth parak of Masechet Avodah Zarah. Hama'ari yayin nesach lebor, afilu kol yam kulo kasher. That if you are dripping yayin nesach into a pit, so it is kasher because of the principle of kama kama batal. Why don't we say the same thing over here? As the rainwater is dripping in from Eretz Yisrael into the Euphrates River, so it's true that it is rainwater, but with every drop that's introduced, that drop becomes batal. And what Tosos suggests over here is that kama kama batal is not an absolute, but it has limits. And Tosos says over here that once we get to the point where the Euphrates River, even though the rainwater was introduced drip by drip, but once you get to the point where the rainwater exceeds in total to that of the natural flowing current of the Euphrates, so then even though we handed the principle of kama kama bato, but once we get to the point of majority, we no longer say kama kama bato. That's Tosus over here in terms of how to deal with the principle of kama kama bato. Certainly an interesting point to take into consideration. Back to the Gemara. The Gemara says, Upligi de Shmuel. Now, interesting that Avuda Shmuel argues with none other than Shmuel himself, or Shmuel argues with his father. Damar Shmuel Nara Mikipa Mivrech. Shmuel states very clearly that when you see a river growing in height, that is self-generated. That is not coming from an external source. And so, it's hard to explain the machlokas over here. It sounds like it's a machlokas in Metzios, which in general we do not want to say. We want to give more of a conceptual explanation to this machlokas. But anyway, but Shmuel argues with his father, and he says that anytime you see the growth in the Euphrates, it's internally generated, it's not coming from the rain, and so therefore there would be no problem, there would be no hesitation, no reservation for a woman to tovel in the Euphrates any time of the year. Upligi didei adidei. And then the Gemara notes that there's one other issue, which the Gemara does not resolve. And that is Shmuel made another statement, which becomes now confounding. Damar Shmuel ein amayim metarim bezochlin, ela pras b'yom tishrei bilvad. He says that water, or that moving water, will only be metahir, only the Euphrates River, and only in the fall, only during the month of Tishrei. And so what comes out over here is that Shmuel is teaching us that the Euphrates River is only going to be pure. It's only going to be pure current, pure stream, only in the month of Tishrei and in no other month. Now, of course, it's confounding because Shmuel just got done teaching us that the Euphrates River is always going to be considered a Mayan year-round. Even as it grows, it's going to be a Mayan. So the Gemara just notes that there's a discrepancy between one statement of Shmuel and the other. The Gemara makes no attempt over here to resolve the two statements of Shmuel. Can a woman use a stream or a flowing river in order to tovel? So it is a major discussion in the Gemara itself. We just saw a range of positions on this issue, and in terms of the Rishonim, also exists a range of positions on this issue, and it's certainly not conclusive, not from the Gemara, nor do the Rishonim have any consensus on this issue. Just going back quickly to the issue of the mats, Avu Yishmael also made mats for his daughter in the full time, why that should be. So there is no discussion in our Gemara. Going back to Masech Nida, we proposed a couple of suggestions of why that should be. When I say we, I mean the Rishonim. Proposed a couple of suggestions. One is that the mats were there so that the as they walked down into the river, so in the fall time, the river was shallow, and there was a lot of mud to go over in order to get into the river. And so those mats over there were created as basically a ramp to go down into the river so that their feet do not get muddy. And there will not be mud as they go into the river because that may pose as a chatzitza. That's one consideration. See the Gemara in Nida over there for other reasons why it is that the mats were made by Abu Dishmol in the month of in the fall time. Okay, and let's finish up our daf today. Parefes al ha'evan. We're discussing the mode of dress of the women, the Jewish women in Madai, and that they would wear the parefes, and that's perfectly fine. And what could they use to fasten it? So the Mishnah was a little bit confusing. Amar Reisha, we said in the beginning of the Mishnah, or not the beginning, but the first part of the parefes, that you are allowed to fasten it and you're allowed to secure it. And then the Mishnah says, but you shouldn't do it on Shabbos. So obviously that is confusing. So Amar Abai Seifas and Lamad Beya. So as far as the Seifas is concerned, it's talking about Lamad Beya, it's talking about a coin. And Rashi writes over here, Lav Bartil Tohu. As far as the coin is concerned, it is Muksa. Aval Evan Shehiksa Lakach Royal Tilto. But when it comes to a stone was designated before the Shabbos to be the fastener. And so therefore a stone, as long as it's designated before Shabbos to be the fastener, so then the stone could use. Presumably, according to Rashi, the same thing would be true regarding a coin, meaning that if the coin was designated before Shabbos as the means of fastening and securing, so then the coin would be fine. It would be, in fact, seemingly no different than the coin being put on the sole of the foot. Presumably, the way Abaye understands the Mishnah is that if you have a coin, but you did not designate it before Shabbos as a fastener, so then you're not allowed to use it on Shabbos. Presumably, that's his point. Abaye asks the following question. Isha Maushe Ta'arim V'tifrof Al Ha'egos Lo Tzilivna Katam B'Shabbos. Abaye asks the following question. Woman, let's say, she wants to move a nut from point A to point B. And for her to carry the nut from point A to point B is simply not an option, as there's no Eruv connecting the two points. So fine, so there's no Eruv. Now, obviously, a woman is allowed to dress and wear her clothing in order to get from point A to point B. That's perfectly fine. And so now Abai wants to know, can the following be done? Let's say she puts on this kind of tunic, and she uses a nut as a fastener. Now, we already pointed out in the Mishnah that's perfectly legitimate. But her real motivation is just simply to get the nut from point A to point B. So the only reason why she's using the nut as a fastener is because really she wants to get the nut to get from point A to point B. But she's doing so in a legal means, even though her true intention is really to carry the nut. So is that acceptable? Is that not acceptable? And the Gemara says, well, the Gemara is going to leave the question unresolved, but at least the Gemara is going to be discussing it intelligently. And that means to say that the Gemara is going to relate it to another debate that we're going to see later in the Masechta. In Daf Kuf Chaf, Rashi here cites, we're discussing clothing that can be taken out of burning house. We are going to be discussing later in the Masechta what happens when the house goes on fire and what can you do in terms of exiting the house. What can we salvage from the house? And so it will be an entire perek dedicated to this topic. It is the 16th perek of our Masechta. And there we're discussing taking out the Sifri Torah and Kol Kitzvei Kodesh. And we're talking about taking out clothing as well. And as we'll see later on, the biggest concern over there is that the Chachamim on one hand want to allow him to take things out of his house, but on the other hand, the more that the Chachamim allow him to take out, the more stressed and anxious he's going to be regarding the burning house, and the fear and the concern of the Chachamim is that he's going to end up putting out the fire on Shabbos. So there is moderation in terms of what could be taken out of the house. Now, in terms of clothing, we're going to see later in the Masechta a machlokis how many layers of clothing can be worn out of such a house on Shabbos, and the Gemara has a debate on this very issue. Debate between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Meir says that you can put layer upon layer as you're exiting the house. Rabbi Yossi says no. You can only wear the base amount of clothing. We'll discuss exactly what the base amount is when we get to the 16th perek anyway. So the Gemara says that our question of a woman transporting a nut on Shabbos and doing so in a manner which would technically be okay as using it as a fastener for her clothing. So the Gemara says, truth of the matter is, we're not going to answer the question, but at least we're going to discuss it in the following context. Tibai laman da'amar, ma'arimin tibai laman da'amar, ein ma'arimin. And this question can be posed according to both opinions that we're going to see later in the 16th parak. Now let's work with the position that you're allowed to put layers of clothing on. And it's a form of harama, meaning obviously you don't need the additional layers. You're only putting on the extra layers because you want to save more clothing from the burning house. So there the Gemara says the consideration is that if we don't allow it, and that person knows that all of his clothing, his entire wardrobe, except for the clothing that he's wearing, is going to be lost in the fire, so he's going to be tempted to put out the fire. But over here, if it's not allowed, okay, it's just a nut. Meaning, the woman is not going to violate Shabbos because just because it's forbidden. Odilmar, on the other hand, the Gemara says, the other possibility is, afilo mandarme in marim. Let's take the other position over there in the 16th parak. In marim in bedleika, which means that you are only allowed to wear the base amount of clothing, and you can't put layer upon layer. So, ahasam derechotza bekach, over there, derechotza bekach, meaning, that is the normal way of dressing, meaning you only wear your base amount of clothing. But avahacha in derechotza bekach in mashapir dami. But over here, where this is not the normal mode in which a woman goes out, so then maybe it would be okay. And take the Gemara leaves this question unresolved, meaning that the Gemara says that we can entertain this question both according to the shita of there by Shabbos, by exiting a burning house, there is an allowance of harama. Still, our question over here maintains a independent question. Or even if I take the position that I cannot do harama in the case of the burning house, but here the question asked over here remains independent of that issue. Okay, let us quickly recap our daf today. Tomorrow, obviously, we pick it up with the Mishnah. In the first part of today's daf, we finished up yesterday's Mishnah and yesterday's discussion regarding the various wads of cotton that a woman can put into her ear, into her on her foot, and into her private area on Shabbos, and the Mishnah says it's fine. And on that, the Gemara made a couple of addendums and provisions in terms of when it would be okay. We talked about other things that a woman is quote unquote wearing, spices and salt that she puts into her mouth. In either to deal with a bad breath or to deal with a small pain. That is allowed on Shabbos. And then we discuss the false tooth. Is a woman allowed to wear a false tooth, or for that matter, a man? This issue obviously is irrespective of man versus woman. Allowed to wear a false tooth on Shabbos. If it's made out of gold, it's a debate. If it's made out of silver, so then everyone agrees that that would be okay because it is not it's not such a discoloration from her other teeth. We discussed in the next part of today's daf a woman going out on Shabbos with a coin that she has connected to a wound on the bottom of her foot, which the Mishnah says it's good. Why specifically a coin? We discussed that. Daughters going out with strings in their ear or toothpicks in their ear in order to keep the piercings open. So that's okay. And then the Mishnah goes on to describe various modes of dress that were popular in the Arab countries, in the countries of Madai, where over there there is a specific mode of dress that women wore. And the issue of whether or not Jewish women can go out in that mode of dress, the answer was yes. They absolutely can. And with that, the Gemara had a couple of very short discussions. But the remainder of today's daf mostly revolved around Avuah d'Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, where with his daughters, there were three specific instructions he had with his daughters, and the reason why it was relevant to our Gemara is because of the first instruction, in which he did not allow his daughters to go out with strings in their ear, and the Gemara explained the difference between Avuah d'Shmuel and our Mishnah. Number two is that he did not allow them to sleep in the same bed together. The Gemara suggested a possible reason why, based on the ruling of Rav Huna. The Gemara says no, or the Gemara ends up giving an alternative explanation. And finally, Avuah d'Shmuel, in terms of preparing a mikvah for his daughters, in the month of Tishrei, he had a specific mikvah made for them. Let's say that better. In the month of Nisan, he had a specific mikvah made for them. But in the month of Tishrei, he made mats for them. The Gemara here does not discuss the mats. The Gemara here discusses very briefly that of the mikvah that he made for his daughters in the month of Tishrei. And we explained the background in terms of what the issues were in terms of mikvahs. And finally, the last issue that we discussed is the parefes, where you're fastening using a stone, using a coin, using a nut. The Gemara discusses whether or not the fastening using a nut is allowed, even though your real intention is only to get the nut from point A to point B, and the Gemara leaves this question unresolved.